creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
Today on Culture Click, we visit with Dan Chouinard. Dan was in Winona June 18th performing a show with Prudence Johnson called The Golden Age of Radio in conjunction with the Great River Shakespeare Festival. We will get to hear about the show and get to know Dan as a musician, writer, and bike rider, as well as discuss how radio has shaped our culture and changed over the years. Following the interview, we will hear musical pieces performed by Dan and Prudence. You're listening to Culture Click on KQAL. This is Therese Stenseth with KQAL, and today, via phone, we have a special guest.
This is Dan Chouinard. I'm a pianist and accordionist from St. Paul.
Dan, what got you into starting to do music?
Well, I come from a musical family. My parents are both music lovers. Neither one of them was a performer, but they both played piano. And my grandparents, whenever they came to visit, would play duets at the piano. I grew up listening to a lot of music and was especially influenced by the Tin Pan Alley ragtime sort of piano that I heard my grandparents play.
You started experimenting for yourself because it says you play piano, you do accordion.
Well, yes, I picked up the accordion along the way. When I was in high school, my family had moved from the city to a small farming town, Lindstrom, Minnesota, and I had started a rock and roll band with some high school pals, and we found that we could make ourselves more marketable if we played polkas and waltzes, and if somebody in the band played them on accordion, that was even better.
That's great.
And that was all the encouragement that I needed to take up the accordion, and I haven't regretted it for an instant.
What do you love so much about the accordion? Is it the sound?
I love the sound. I love that it's more portable than a piano, because that allows you then to take the music places you can't really go with the piano, you know, on the beach. You can't load the piano on your bicycle and go bicycling across foreign lands. But you can do that with an accordion, and I have. I also love that the accordion has introduced me to new and different repertoire that isn't so much a part of piano repertoire. I've got to play traditional Irish music and French musette and Brazilian choros and all sorts of things.
You had mentioned traveling by bike and being able to pack it up with you. When did you go ahead and decide, I'm going to bike and take the accordion with me and do this writing that you do? How did incorporating all that together come about?
Well, it was something that, it was a combination of things that kind of evolved over time. I, like most kids, I grew up riding a bicycle, but discovered as I got older that I loved taking longer trips on the bike. It was really while I was stuck over in Europe when 9/11 happened in 2001. I had a three-week performing stint over there on a cruise ship. I know this is a story that's not invoking a whole lot of sympathy yet, but after having played this wonderful gig on a cruise ship and then kind of being trapped over in Europe on the day that I was supposed to fly home because planes were not flying anywhere in and out of the United States at that time, I had to kind of scramble and find a place to stay and then keep busy for a week because it took about a week to get a ticket to come home. And I had my accordion with me. I was staying in a little camper, big sprawling vacation campground outside of Nice in the south of France, right on the Mediterranean. And one day I decided to rent a bicycle, and I stumbled upon a town festival, a grape harvest festival. And there was a band playing in the street, food in the streets. It was the town carnival, really. And I asked the guys in the band if they would let me sit in with them. And as I was cruising home that night down the hill back to the shimmering Mediterranean on the bicycle after this unforgettable day of playing traditional Provençal music with these guys on the accordion, it made me think, this might just be kind of a magical recipe to try for a few weeks or maybe a few months. And so I did. The next year, 2002, I spent 5 months bicycling around Europe with a tent, a sleeping bag, and my little accordion. Kind of call it my midlife crisis on a bicycle, but it was a good way to spend it.
What was your favorite place when you were over there?
Well, I speak French and Italian. Those are the two languages that I spent a lot of time as a college student studying and speaking. So I have the best time where I can talk with people. And those were the places where I also picked up a lot of music, a lot of songs in the midst of those sorts of conversations and with hanging out with musicians. By the end of the trip, I was up in the north of Europe, Holland, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Scotland. And those are places that by September, the weather was starting to be kind of dicey, and I think I need to go back and give those places another try.
Right.
Because I got rained on just a little bit too much for my taste. But France and Italy, those were beautiful places to spend June, July, August.
Now here in the U.S., where have you traveled?
In the U.S., I have I've traveled around Minnesota and Wisconsin a certain amount, and then out on the East Coast. It's getting a little expensive to ship your bicycle around on a plane, but it's still pretty cheap to take it on the train. Amtrak charges $10 each way, and if you need the box to put the bike in, they'll sell you a box for $5 and reuse it at the end. It's still a relatively good deal to travel with a bicycle by train. And so I've done that a couple of times out to the East Coast, to New York City. Manhattan is a surprisingly friendly city to bicycle around in.
Yeah, it is.
Used to the idea of being on the streets in New York City with taxi cabs zooming by at 50 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I've biked from there up through Vermont, up through upstate New York and Vermont, and up to Montreal and Quebec, where I have some family history up there. And in fact, where there was a family reunion a couple of years ago. And that's beautiful country. I recommend it.
That's great. And so you're writing stories from these travels.
Writing about these travels is something, it's an opportunity that has been presented to me, mostly by invitations from Minnesota Public Radio to create programs about the sort of travel that I do that combines biking and music making. I limit myself, my writing right now, to talking about the experiences of travel and encountering new music and new cultures.
I thought that was so interesting that you take the accordion with you on the bike and then you write about it afterwards. It was really original. I haven't heard of that before.
I can understand why most bicyclists who are typically fastidious about every ounce of weight they carry on the bicycle and will go out of their way to make sure that the coffee mug they're taking with them is titanium and that everything is ultra lightweight, and then to plop an 11-pound accordion on top of all that isn't the first thing that bikers would think of. And to be totally honest, I'm not sure how many more times I will do it, because it changes the nature of the trip. It makes the music, it forces the music more front and center, and you have to really want to get out and play music if you're really schlepping that thing, you know, over mountainside, you know, and across the dusty plains with you day after day.
Now, you had mentioned you went to school for different languages. Now, in your education, you have taught those different languages?
Yes, for a while. While I was a graduate student at the University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities, I taught first-year language in the French and Italian department. I spent a couple of years teaching French, first-year French, and a couple of years teaching first-year Italian.
Do you have a music degree background, too, then?
Yes. I went to St. John's University here in Minnesota, up in Collegeville, as an undergrad. I got a piano major there, but also tacked on a French major when it seemed pretty clear to me that French classes were going to make my stay there at St. John's all the more interesting.
Now, currently, you're still doing assistant music director in Minneapolis?
The official position is one that I've moved out of. I still am very involved at St. John of Arc Church in South Minneapolis, yes, but more as a music advisor, and I help plan and produce their special music events, concert series, and music fundraisers.
You're still producing The Singer's Voice, though, right, that you do at the Dakota Jazz Club?
The Singer's Voice is a series that I did from 1994 to 2000, and that was a live Sunday night broadcast from the old Dakota Jazz Club when it was located in Bandana Square in St. Paul. They've now moved to downtown Minneapolis. They've got a beautiful space there, and I do play there from time to time, but you may know this, doing a regular radio show is a bit of a commitment.
Yes, it is.
And after a few years of that, I decided it was time for a break.
Well, let's talk about the Great River Shakespeare Festival. You said this is going to be your fourth year coming to
it? No, I think my count is correct on that. I have been there at least the past 2 years. I've been there with Prudence Johnson to do a sort of post-show concert and sing-along. My first time to the Great Rivers Shakespeare Festival was when I was taking a bike trip with my partner, and we decided that after a couple days of bicycling in 90-degree heat and winding up at the River Bluffs Park there, just south of Winona, and having endured 3 flat tires in 2 days, we decided that we might give the bike touring thing a rest and just go find a hotel in Winona. It just so happened that the Shakespeare Festival was happening right at that time, and it was just such a charming way to end that trip. We spent a couple of nights in Winona and then hopped on the train and headed back home. And in the time in Winona, we took in a play. It was wonderful to explore the town, a town that I hadn't really known much at all before then, and to see it so alive in the beautiful midsummer and to catch some really great theater while we were there. So we kind of got hooked, and it's become a yearly routine. I decided I would try and find some excuse to come spend a couple of nights every year.
You contacted Great River Shakespeare Festival?
Yeah, and I've got a couple of friends who are actors in the company and who made it easy for me to be in touch with the right people.
So let's talk a little bit about the show you're going to be doing, which is the Golden Age of Radio show, and what that encompasses.
The Golden Age of Radio is a show that I have put together with Prudence Johnson, who is a singer in the Twin Cities, who's been kind of on the scene here since the mid-70s, and she and I work together quite a bit as a duo, and we both have a love of music from the 20s, 30s, and 40s, music from this period that coincides with what is known as the Golden Age of Radio, the early years of the 20s through the advent of television, basically 1950 or so. When we were approached by the Minnesota Historical Society to pull together a show of some sort that would complement their current main exhibit, which is about Minnesota's greatest generation, an exhibit that focuses on the Depression years, the World War II years, and then the boom years that followed. Prudence and I decided, why not indulge our love of the music of this era and focus on the cultural force that was radio. Prudence and I wind up doing over a dozen, maybe a dozen and a half tunes in this show from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And there's stuff from Gershwin and Harold Arlen and Hoagy Carmichael. There's stuff from the opera Porgy and Bess, which came out in 1935. And then some music with local flavor as well, particular some stuff from Whoopi Jones. So there's the obligatory polka moment in the show as well. So it's a nice musical variety in the show as well. So that's what this show is. So a bunch of stories and most importantly music from those early years when radio really was the main mass technology that brought this country together in a way that had never been done before, and brought people into sharing experiences in real time and simultaneously across the country, which changed music as well, changed the way we do music by bringing microphones and amplification into the world of musicians and ballrooms and nightclubs. It provided a lot of fertile material and been a good way to travel around the support of the Historical Society and with the support of libraries across the state who partner with the Historical Society. So Winona is one of our stops on the touring that we're doing in this roughly 6 month, 9 month period here.
What do you really enjoy about working with Prudence?
She's a consummate artist. She's got a fantastic voice, a fantastic instrument, as people like to say. And when she's singing, she's so at ease with what she's doing and so clearly enjoys what she does that it makes it easier for me to feel that same sense of ease and enjoyment. I think we click really well, and I love working with her.
Through your research of developing the show The Golden Age of Radio, what has been the most surprising facts that you have found out that you incorporate into the show, or surprising stories you have discovered for yourself?
Well, it's been interesting to me, for one thing, to gather the images that we've gathered for this show. I should add, this is not a show of just music and stories and talking, but we've got all sorts of historic images archived at the History Center and elsewhere. And it's been an interesting process to do the research that we did to pull the images together, and especially not just images, but histories of some of the local radio stations and how they developed, and to find out that WCCO, you know, as everybody would imagine, was one of the first radio stations in the area. But right up there with them were KSTP and WDGY, which in fact are both a little older than CCO radio, and just how shoestring these operations were at the beginning, operating out of people's basements or out of the top floor of hotels and ballrooms. And it's been interesting to see how the change in the technology impacted the lives of musicians as well. I mentioned that, you know, radio brought microphones and amplification into the world of performing musicians, and it also changed the way musicians did their business, and the sorts of gigs that were prized were not necessarily the ones that landed you a record contract, for example. They were the ones in places that had a radio hookup, and even if they didn't pay very well, it was much more valuable to have a non-paying gig at a place with a radio hookup than to have a well-paid gig elsewhere, because the radio was so powerful in spreading the word about what you did that if you were good and the word got around, you would stand to benefit greatly. So it's been interesting to see just how that technology impacted the lives of musicians and the lives of music consumers, which was pretty much everybody.
It's interesting because the base technology of how things are transmitted is still relevant today, but to see how it's evolved and how it, I don't want to say it's more complicated now. You know, there's so many different outlets that radio is used in conjunction with, like videos being used now on websites and things of that nature, to see how the outreach can stay out there, especially in the current generation where you have iPhones, you have iPods, and you have satellite radio too. So people are kind of tuning into more specific things that they're looking to hear, and how that all gets affected for the artist. It's definitely shape-shifting. In your opinion, how do you think that's going to affect things in the future?
Well, the multiplicity of media, I think it's starting to kind of split us apart in a way. We certainly have access. All of us now have instantaneous access through any number of channels to the same sorts of information. But I think what is emerging is that given lots of choices of media, we're kind of choosing the news and information we want to hear. And as a result, there's less of a cohesive experience of current events and of national culture. You know, we're not tuning into just one of three radio networks anymore. We're not tuning into one of three television networks anymore. We're tuning into whichever media stream is our favorite, and it's probably providing content that is geared to you, the audience member, you and your particular demographic. And some of this is kind of, I'm recalling an article that I read last fall in, I think it was the New Yorker magazine, but there is this trend that's being noticed in the media that given more choice, we tend to consume information in a way that creates less consensus rather than more. And I think that functions maybe on an artistic level as well, as it, when you look at pop music and what constitutes, I wonder if you'd even get a consensus from people as to what the word popular means now when it's applied to music. I'm not sure I would, but then again, I'm a crusty old curmudgeon now. You know, but I grew up on pop radio of the 1970s. It was radio that was astonishingly diverse, at least by today's standards. You know, you'd have a tune by James Taylor up against a tune by Led Zeppelin, up against a tune by Earth, Wind, and Fire, up against John Denver and the Carpenters, and all of this swirled together, you know, and that's kind of now the oldies station playlists,
right,
in a way. But that was the way adolescents consumed music back then, and I think it fostered maybe a tolerance, or at least you were exposed to a wide variety of music. And I have a hunch that given the way the media landscape has changed now, that sort of variety is is maybe not as much a feature.
Well, I've noticed that coming back to the Midwest from being out east for so long. I have noticed when I tune in different dials, I'm not getting the mix that I was getting before. And I feel like a lot of the music right now, the popular music, is very heavily produced electronica in some respects in the background, or synth beats, things not created by real instruments. I don't know if that's just a fad and it's going to go away or not, but I'm not getting a real diverse sense of different styles right now.
Well, that was, you know, the electronics kind of started sliding in the 70s, but they really took hold in the 80s and to a large extent replaced a lot of, you know, the acoustic content of pop music. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And it just so happens that that coincided with my own personal declining interest in listening to pop radio. But, you know, I was getting into my 20s then, and statistically, people listen to the most pop radio when they're in their teens. And but even so, I think for me, I would agree there was something about the mechanical electronic aspect of it that didn't appeal to me nearly as much, you know, as the acoustic instruments and the real-time, non-studio-manipulated performances of earlier recordings. Not to say that there wasn't retracking and editing that went on, but the capability to do that sort of precision fixing and tweaking changed so dramatically in the 80s. And now it's reached a point where you're not really sure that, you know, if Britney Spears is singing that tune, it's, you don't know if a single one of those notes that she sang has not been tweaked in some way or another. And not just to single out Britney Spears for any special attention in that regard, but there are now these capabilities to refine and perfect performances to a point where they lose their humanity in some degree.
Right now, we take you to some of that legendary music that Dan Chouinard and Prudence Johnson perform.
Nothing seemed to matter anymore. Didn't care what I was headed for. Time was standing still. Nothing counted till there came a knock, knock, knocking at the door. Love walked right in and drove the shadows away. Love walked right in and brought my sunniest day. And I forgot the gloom of the past. One look, and I had found my future at last. One look, and I had found a world completely new. When love walked in with you. Thank you. a nuttin', nuttin's plenty for me. I got no car, I got no mule, I got no misery. The folks with plenty of plenty got a lock on the door. Afraid somebody's gonna rob them while they're out making more. What for? I got no lock on the door, that's no way to be. They can steal the rug from the floor, that's okay with me, 'cause the things that I prize, like the stars in the skies, all are free. Oh, I got plenty of nothing, nothing's plenty for me. I got my gal, got my song, heaven the whole day long. I got my gal, I got my Lord, I got my song.
We want to thank Dan for taking some time to talk with us about his adventures in music, biking, and writing, and also for sharing with us a bit about radio culture and his show, The Golden Age of Radio. You've been listening to Culture Click on KQAL.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM. On the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.